This is Halftime with the Playmakers, your midweek partner with the live show, The Playmakers, aired on WANM FM 90.5 on Saturday from 12:30 to 2. I'm Wes from the 904. Duval in the building, baby. And we're going to talk some great sports topics for you. We got college basketball, FAMU, and national. And we're going to be rebuilding some NFL teams and be talking some NBA ball. But first, fellas, introduce yourselves.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, JB the King. We back here with the Playmakers.
What's up, y'all? It's Flo, what's fine? It's Kaji Latica, repping the Crooked Letter Place, 601 Magnolia State.
How's everyone doing? It's Joshua Bounds, representing the 850.
We're going to start this one off how we always do, talking about some FAMU sports. And before we get to basketball, I really want to start off by saying congratulations to the women's indoor track team. They are now SWAC champions. You know, we love our sports here, but in some of our sports don't get enough recognition. And we just really wanted to shout out the women's indoor track team because they need all the recognition for winning this act.
So that we can count on a good bit of our women's sports to bring home a championship.
Absolutely.
Hey, come on, don't do it like that now.
But no, definitely shout out to the track team. We will be having more coverage. Hopefully we'll get some interviews soon. We got a couple things scheduled, so y'all make sure y'all stay tuned. But yeah, a lot of people have been breaking their own personal records all year. And then you have a lot of just SWAC champions. I think we had 8 this meet, so definitely good things. We won Coach of the Year as well, so continue to do your thing. Shout out to the track team.
We might even have them come on the show, depending, see if Hopefully. They want to. But now we're going to be talking about FAMU basketball. The men's season has been going, you know, pretty well. A great start, you know, for Charlie Ward's first year as our head coach. We just beat Alabama State. What did we see in that game that we like to see and continue on for the rest of this season?
This win against Alabama State is what we needed to see. Again, we've seen how the Rattlers have been up and down this season. Mm-hmm. This win right here, I loved every moment of it. Honestly, if you ask me, the player of the game was DeLama. The way that he was just a presence on the inside, I do need him to get his rebound numbers up, but the fact that he was just active, I mean, he was getting fouled due to how aggressive he was in the paint. Went to the free throw line 13 times, knocked down 8. This is what we need to see going forward. We need to see everyone contributing, and we need to see folks just making an effort on the boards. And most importantly, with these shooting struggles that we've been having, I love watching how in that game, I saw a lot of pump fakes from the three-point line and just driving in to get either the mid-range jump shot or the layup. That's how you win games.
Yeah, Josh, I like how you mentioned rebounding, the rebounding margin was 16. FAMU won the rebounding margin, but Micah Octave with 14 rebounds. Mm-hmm. I wasn't in town to see the game, but just looking at the box score, 14 is ridiculous. But also Antonio Baker Jr., that's a new name on the box score. Game with 19 points and 9 rebounds. That's definitely something we would like to see continue going forward. Maybe not from him specifically, but just, you know, people from outside of the usual three. You know, you have Jordan Chapman, Micah Octave, and Jaquan Sanders, who are usually they're usually the big three that get all the stats and everything. But to see a game with, you know, with Miles DeLama and Antonio Baker actually, you know, to see them contributing and being those contributors outside of our usual is promising to see.
Yeah, like Q, I wasn't in town this weekend, so I wasn't able to catch the game.
He was all out of town?
Yeah. All doing stuff, man. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking at the numbers. The shooting still concerns me. 25% from the three is
crazy. Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
But being able to get it done as we're in the home stretch, we have 3 more games left. We play Southern, Grambling, and then Bethune. We beat Southern and Grambling earlier this season. Mm-hmm. So they're both, or Southern at least, is sitting at the top of the conference, and then Bethune is obviously the one seed right now. So these games are going to be very, very crucial. I think we got to get that shooting together, though, if we want to be real contenders.
Absolutely. The shooting numbers are pretty alarming. And if Jordan Chapman doesn't shoot 50% from three, it's even worse. Mm-hmm. He went 3 for 6. So, like, that's pretty bad. But like you were saying, let's say we win out. We beat Bethune and Southern. Those are 1-2 in the SWAC. Grambling's at the bottom. But, you know, a win's a win in the conference. Last podcast, we were talking about how important, you know, your ranking in the SWAC is, because you get a 2-game bye in the tournament if you're in the top 4. And we're sitting
at six,
top 6
behind Jackson State, who hasn't played, that needs to play one more game to like have as many games played as us. So if it works out, you know, we could sneak into that top 4 maybe, especially if we're beating the number 1 and 2 teams. So if we get that top 4, we get 2 byes, but securing, you know, our position right now, at least getting that 1-game bye is very important.
And something to think about, I'm sure this is very unlikely to happen, but if Bethune-Cookman, you know, secures that 1 seed before we play them the last game of the season, would maybe they might consider resting, you know, resting starters.
Because that's a good point.
Obviously, they're not getting in at large. They have to win the tournament regardless.
Do you feel like the rivalry is too big for them to do
that's
that?
That's why I said it was. It's pride. I feel like it's unlikely. Yeah, it's a pride thing. You can't to say that you went out there and pretty much gave up the game against your rival. You can't do that. But in theory, it's something that it's something to think about. But also, if you look at it from Bethune-Cookman's standpoint, if you're the reason why FAMU got a top four seed, then you know that could come back to bite you too.
I think one of the biggest things though with FAMU, because like we talked about with the shooting struggles that we're having right now, I just need to see more so of driving into the paint and going in trying to get layups and mid-range jump shots. Because my biggest problem has been Jaquan Sanders. I love the fact that he is one of our main scorers, but the problem is you look at his stats from last night, right? He went 1 of 6 from 3-point line last night. Again, he was obviously cold, and you just can't afford to keep on jacking up 3-pointers when you're cold. All right, there's no shame in taking the pump fake and settling for that mid-range jump shot or driving in for a contested layup to try to draw in one. There's no problem with that. You can't just force yourself out of a 3-point slump by shooting more threes. That's just not possible.
Yeah, and I think, and I mean, you mentioned that. I feel like that's something that FAMU has fallen victim to this whole season. It's just they keep on shooting no matter whether they make it or not. And you know, if we get a game like Prairie View where they just made every single shot, you know, it can work out for you. But a lot more often than not, we're seeing that FAMU, they're throwing up shots at least 3-pointer wise.
It's a pretty positive outlook for us on the men's side, but on the women's side, we are on the 4-game losing streak. We have 3 games left in the season, just like the men. We play the same team, Southern Grambling and Bethune. Somehow, at 6-7 in the conference, we're still hanging around to a first round bye. What are we looking for? Because we're in the tournament, everyone gets in the format of the swag tournament. You know, we're not terrible, but we're not good. We had some injuries. That was part of it. You know, our star point guard was out for a few games. Is she still out? I believe she's still out. Let me check if she played last game.
I believe Purefoy did play last game.
She played last game?
Yeah, she did. I remember.
Okay, so she's back. It was for some of our, because we had a couple games we should have won, but she was out on injury, and she's, you know, the focal point of our offense. Going into swag tournament, we're going to be sitting around the middle. What are we looking for? Do we think, you know, Cinderella run? Do we think, you know, just do what you can do?
I mean,
do you think, what are we feeling?
I would love to see a Cinderella run, but holistically, with the way that our season has been going, my goodness, it's just not pretty. It's just not likely. What I want to see, though, in this swag tournament, well, before we even get to swag tournament, first and foremost, I want to see the ladies finish up the year strong. You have, what, 3 more games left, I think, on our schedule. Yep. In these next 3 games, I need to see 4 quarters of a complete game where you're shooting the ball well, you're rebounding, and you're playing aggressive defense. That's what I need to see in all 3 games. That way, going to the tournament, we at least know that they will be competitive. Because if they go into the SWAC tournament and they lose, but it's like a tough loss, if you will, I'm happy with that. I just don't want to see the leagues get blown out.
Honestly, looking at the SWAC standings, they need to win at least 2 out of 3 of these games. They're sitting right there with Grambling in the standings. They're right behind Grambling. Grambling 6-7 in the SWAC. FAMU is 6-9 in the SWAC, and then Bethune-Cookman is 4-11 in the SWAC. I know we lost to them at the very beginning of the season, but again, that's when we were still battling with injuries. So hopefully, if we are fully healthy by the end of the season, Bethune-Cookman should not be a game that we need to lose. But winning those 2 games, especially with them being back-to-back, you know, Southern, I would say it's an important game to win because we are, again, like y'all mentioned, we are on a 4-game losing streak, and extending that to a 5-game losing streak can really kill a team's morale. But at the end of the day, we've already beaten Southern this season, and Southern is in the top 4 in the standings, and they're clearly in the top 4. So I don't expect us to come with a win away from home. But those last 2 games, Grambling and Bethune-Cookman, those are games that we need to win if we want to see any sort of success in the tournament.
Yeah, it's definitely a morale thing. I feel like the effort has definitely dropped down a little bit. Last game, we allowed someone to get 21 rebounds on us.
Wow.
8 offensive rebounds, which, you know, rebounds definitely is a skill, but it's a lot about hustle, it's a lot about effort. So I would like for us to build some type of momentum. It has been a little bit rough. We started off kind of hot, but we definitely need to pull it back together, especially against Bethune.
All right, now we're going to shift over to the NFL. You know, the season's over, but we're not done talking about it. I hate to break it to you guys. I'm always going to be talking about the NFL. We're doing our segment, Reload or Rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
We did the first 3 picks of the draft last week, so tune in to that week. You know, go back and listen. Stop what you're doing. Go back and can listen to that one because it makes sense. It's all in order, so come back to this one after you're done. And then, so we're on the Titans, the number 4 overall pick.
Yes, indeed.
Who would you take with the number 4 overall pick if you were the Tennessee Titans? JB.
Titans are in an interesting position. Their team is bad, like, yes, just straight up.
Yep.
So I feel like this is a draft where you're really going to see how GMs think, whether fit or just best player available. I'm more of a best player available type of guy. I think you got to help out Cam Ward some way, somehow. So whether that's for me, getting an offensive lineman or wide receiver. And me personally, I'd go wide receiver. I'd probably go Carnell Tate here. I'd probably go Carnell Tate here just to help out Cam Ward. I do believe an O-line is crucial, but there is a lot of offensive linemen in the free agency. So hopefully they can go and sign a couple of pieces just to bring in some veteran presence. But I think you need that player alongside Cam Ward because he's not, a quarterback can't progress without a number one wide receiver.
And you think the number one receiver in the draft is Carnell Tate?
I think the number one wide receiver is Jordan Tyson. But
well, then why aren't we taking Jordan Tyson?
I am scared of his injury health.
Okay.
His health is all over the place. He's dealt with some pretty bad injuries with his back, I believe. And that's just a scary sight in the top 5 for me personally. So I will go Carnell Tate because I think he's bona fide going to be a star, no doubt. You know, so I think that's the safest pick, and that's what I would do as well.
Well, so Carnell Tate, you know, it's never like a reach to, you know, bet on an Ohio State receiver and all that.
Right.
Of course.
But, you know, top 5 pick receiver means you got to be generational. Do you think he's going to come in and be a great 1,000-yard receiver pretty much first year is usually like a top 5 pick? You think he's going to be that?
I think he's going to be that.
Okay, now I know. Okay, I got it. Okay, so speaking on the Titans, they obviously have a lot of holes outside of Jeffrey Simmons and Cam Ward. They could really pretty much use anything. And as far as offensive line goes, you know, you can never really have too many offensive linemen because it's a thin position in the league and you're always going to be in need of one. But I think the Titans, they have the leeway to not take one this year because the 2 years before Cam Ward, they took an offensive lineman. They took J.C. Latham in 2024. And before that, they took Peter Skoronski. So both of those guys are their cornerstones. So and some mocks have them going with a defensive lineman. But I feel like I feel like the Carnell Tate pick is a good one. That can give Cam Ward a wide receiver that he can grow with, you know, for however many years they play with each other. So,
yeah. Josh?
For me, honestly, it's kind of sort of just like what everyone said. Tennessee right now kind of sort of has a toss-up, if you will, for who they can choose. I mean, holistically, I do agree with JB. I think it would be best for them to go the wide receiver route. You have a young quarterback who has an arm. It wouldn't be a bad idea to go target either Jordan Tyson or Carnell Tate. Honestly, if you want to go the defensive route, I wouldn't be too upset if they went after maybe a linebacker and get like Jacob Rodriguez. Because Jacob Rodriguez, he's a dog. And I think he will really help the Tennessee Titans defense solidify themselves a little further.
All right, the mock draft I'm looking at has David Bailey out of Texas Tech, the edge, going to the Tennessee Titans. But I agree with you guys. You should support your young quarterback. You know, he's going to be – the flashes he showed his rookie year, he's going to be a good quarterback for a while in the NFL. And I feel like with the new coaching staff, you know, Robert Saleh coming in, he's a defensive guy.
Yeah.
You know, defense, as much as it's about players – a lot of it can be schemed up, you know. Mm-hmm. You can support each other. You can compensate for weaknesses. It's not as easy to do that on offense, I feel, in the NFL at least. And I don't like drafting offensive linemen high just because it's more frequently that they're busts. Like Will Campbell, I don't think he's like a career bust.
He
had an injury midseason that he kind of fell off a cliff when he started going up against higher level talent. He was still able to compete, you know, against mediocre guys. You know, you could see him win some reps. So I don't think he's a bad guy at all. But you feel like such a waste when you draft like a tackle high. He's just not good at all. And it happens more frequently. And I feel like it's easier to bet on a receiver and it has a higher return because there's of explosive plays. I would agree. I would probably take a receiver. Carnell Tate, you know, do I think he's going to be an immediate impact guy? I don't know. But, you know, he needs so much help at that receiver position. I think you have to reach on it. Now going to the number 5 overall pick, the Giants. Who do you take?
you know, with the Giants, they're
they can take a lot, man.
Yeah, they're interesting though, because it's one of those things. Like, yes, they drafted their quarterback last year.
Oh,
but I'm not. I wouldn't pick one this year.
Oh,
but because especially with Mendoza off, he's gonna be off the board. But it's one of those things. Like, I'm not entirely sold on Jackson Dart yet.
Why not?
I don't know. It's just, he just doesn't jump off the page, if that makes sense. Like,
he just, I agree and I disagree. Like, I feel like he's,
he wasn't, not to cut you off, but he wasn't a bad quarterback by any means.
Mm-hmm.
But he just, I don't know. I feel like if he's going to be a guy that you like build your team around, I feel like he needs to be a lot better.
He reminds me of Baker Mayfield. He reminds me of just a guy who's not an amazing athlete, but can move. Mm-hmm. He's not a great, you know, pocket passer, but he can get it done. He's not a great gunslinger. He just can move off platform and throw, but he can also get it done. Like, he just reminds me of like a get it done. It might be ugly, but we might get some wins type of quarterback.
He got that competitive nature in him.
Yeah,
definitely. And we got to remember, like, his coach got fired midseason. He didn't have his number one wide receiver and Malik mm-hmm. Nabers. They lost Gattaboo. So like,
yeah, no, his whole off. I feel like the Giants are a sneaky team to just turn their team around to.
Oh yeah.
Not like a contender, but to like a team you can't sleep on, to a team you really just can't look over. Because the Giants, like, you see them on the schedule, you're like, win, what's going on next week? Yeah, but, you know, they're not that anymore, I think, easily in this offseason.
And to elaborate on the Giants, they're good on defensive line.
They are.
Absolutely.
That's a blessing to have your defensive line set to where you don't have to focus on it in the draft. So honestly, I think they just go offensive line at this point. They need guys to protect Jackson Dart if that's the guy that they're gonna go with. And we see Jackson Dart is a guy who loves to get hit. He loves to find contact. So if he's gonna do that while he's scrambling, then y'all better keep him upright in the pocket.
Do you have a specific prospect you would think to get there at five?
I think
we had the Cardinals taking the offensive lineman.
Yeah,
last time, but I'm not sure.
Was it the guy out of Miami?
Yeah, Francis Matt.
I have no idea.
I'm not even gonna try that. I'm not gonna disrespect him like that.
The tackles out of Utah are really good. Spencer Fano mm-hmm. is really good.
Yeah.
Me personally, if I'm the Giants, I'm taking best player available, and I think that's Caleb Downs.
Mm.
Like we said, they have a good defensive line. I feel like their defense is solid overall.
Yep.
And then their offense, you already have your core pieces. You could use another offensive lineman because I do feel like they were disappointing at times.
Mm-hmm.
But Caleb Downs is a difference maker, man. And mm-hmm. like, you just brought in Harbaugh, who just had Kyle Hamilton on his team. And we see how, you know, he wasn't a defense coordinator, but we see how he was used in the system. And I feel like kind of there's been a resurgence of safeties recently. I think mm-hmm. Caleb Downs is that next guy to just be that playmaker for them. You know what I'm saying?
What do you think, Josh?
Honestly, with the Giants, the biggest thing is right now, offensively, the only thing I can really see them going after is an O tackle. Because, like I said, they have the weapons offensively. It seems like Jackson Dart might be their quarterback of the future. It all determines on how John Harbaugh wants to play this out. They have a running back in Cam Scataboo, and then they have their weapon in Malik Nabers as their wide receiver one.
Yeah.
So obviously, get an old lineman to protect him, or like JB said, Caleb Downs. That's not really that bad of a pick. I mean, if I remember correctly, isn't Caleb Downs like the number one safety going to this draft?
Yeah,
he was the number one safety.
Caleb Downs was the number one safety last year before he was coming out.
Whoever he was covering in college, it was clamps all night long. There was no targeting him. Teams were afraid to target him. And having a presence like that on the defensive end could definitely shake some things up for the Giants and make them somewhat scary. Just improve them, if you will.
I agree. I just wanted not to go back, but I asked Austin Kaysen, who's our resident, you know, Tennessee Titans fan. He said that he'd want them to draft Caleb Downs.
It seems like everybody wants Caleb Downs.
I mean, he's such a crazy prospect. Yeah.
But does the NFL, because again, people would be like, oh, well, he's a safety. I don't want to take him that high. I'm like, look, if you're a good player, don't overthink it.
All right, now here's a really, I think, will be a little controversial in the studio. The Browns have the sixth pick.
Yes, indeed.
Who do we take, JB, the Browns fan?
We have two first-round picks this year. And me and my brother, you know, obviously he's a Browns fan too. We've been debating for a couple of weeks about this. I'm team go get an offensive lineman. If the circumstance of the Utah guy and the Miami guy are both off the board, then I think we take wide receiver. I think our biggest need is O-lineman. All of our offensive linemen are free agents right now. Betonio said he might retire or he's not coming back.
He's been out in the league a while. Yeah, I don't know how old he is. But
Is Wyatt Teller coming back?
Wyatt Teller, I don't know what's going on with him. I believe he's a free agent. Like, something about our offensive line, and it was horrible last year. I believe we can do that and then get a wide receiver later in the draft. There's a lot of prospects that I like personally. So that's what I would go with. But considering who we've already taken as a group, I'm taking Jordan Tyson. You know, Jalen Tyson is on the Cavs, bringing his brother to Cleveland. Like I said before, I think he's the best wide receiver prospect. We are a little concerned about his injury health, but he's a dog. Like, if you watch film.
Wait, I never even thought about them being brothers.
Yeah, they're brothers. Jalen Tyson be doing press conferences.
Jalen Tyson went to Arizona State too, didn't he?
I believe so, yeah. So.
Huh. I think we
definitely either go Tyson or we go offensive lineman, in my opinion.
I don't hate the offensive lineman pick at all. I just feel like at least with how the draft is going, if the Cardinals pick one and then if the Giants pick one too, then it's pretty slim pickings from there, unless you just want to go and reach for somebody. I would say for the Browns case, again, they could use pretty much anything. But their receivers,
horrible.
Yeah, their receivers are not good at all. And I feel like they at least have to go through another year of the Shedeur Sanders thing, or at least give Shedeur another year. I'm not saying he's your quarterback of the future, but if you give him another year just to see what he's working with, I don't hate the wide receiver pick at all. Although I have seen a couple mock drafts with them drafting an edge rusher.
I'd be so mad.
Like Reuben
what?
Put out there. I'd be so mad.
But imagine, could you imagine Reuben Bain with Miles Garrett or Arvell Reese with Miles Garrett?
Yes, I mean, that would lose game 10-0,
that
bro.
Would be
what? Why?
Literally.
Their defense is already good. They're going to be another top 5, top 10 defense.
Even when Jim Schwartz gone?
Man, it don't matter. We got Miles Garrett.
And Carson Schlesinger, the White Rocket, bro.
Hopefully, shout out to Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. I hope he comes back. They talk about he may never play football again.
So yeah, because that gruesome injury he got.
Oh, yeah. We hate Derrick Henry over here.
I'm going to need you to relax.
Yeah. But, relax. I mean, you know, I just thought it was interesting with some mocks having him taking the edge rusher. But I do like the Jordan Tyson pick. I feel like that makes the most sense with just how bare that receiver room is.
Bounce.
Honestly, I do agree with what you're saying, though, Q, because I truly believe that Cleveland should go the route of picking the offensive player first. Because, well, JB, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
With the Browns, you said they have 2 first-round picks. They have a 6th pick. When's their 2nd pick?
I believe 21.
24. Yeah, that Jags.
They got that
really.
Okay.
Yeah, Jags.
So, honestly, this does put you into an interesting predicament. Because, personally, I know if I got the first round, I'm trying to go get a wide receiver and an offensive tackle.
Absolutely.
But then that does become the question. Which pick do you go with first? Do you go with that old tackle at 6 and risk the wide receiver? Or go wide receiver and risk the old tackle near the end of the first round?
Yeah,
what I'm seeing right now is they're saying that Spencer Fanoh, old tackle from Utah, could be going to the Browns.
Yeah.
So honestly, I don't really hate if they go offensive tackle or wide receiver. It's basically just up to them how they want to play it.
Definitely.
Yeah, and honestly, and even then, like, if they do take a tackle with that pick, there's plenty of wide receivers in the back end of the draft.
Man, Denzel Boston is my guy, bro.
And even then, if they want to, I don't know how many second or third round picks the Browns have, but they could, you know, potentially use that second pick and move back up maybe into the top 15. You know, if somebody falls, maybe if Jordan Tyson falls, maybe you can still get him and the offensive tackle that you wanted.
Is this correct that the Browns have -$19 million in cap space?
Oh my goodness.
Goodness.
Hey, bro, cap space is fake, bro. We're going to reconstruct some contracts, bro. We'll be all right.
But yes, you say that and then end up like the Saints. That's
good.
Hey.
Nearly $40 million in dead cap. Yes, I believe that's Deshaun Watson.
You know, we're playing Deshaun Watson.
Saints built up all that dead cap to keep a 40-year-old Drew Brees and Michael Thomas, who played 2 games a year. So
speaking of, they talking about Deshaun Watson might play, bro. I will actually stop being a Browns fan. I kid you not.
Why not? What's wrong with that? He was
an all-pro
quarterback for a little while. Pro Bowl. I don't know if he was all-pro.
Outside of the non-football stuff, he's just not good.
That injury messed him up.
It shocked me how fast he became bad.
I'm telling you, I was so excited when we traded for him, and it just
really
We're cursed.
You might be, but so are the Ravens a little bit.
Okay.
Listen, don't get me started. I agree with the Jordan Tyson take. I would probably take receiver. I think I told you I don't like to reach on O-linemen. I've already explained that. So I would definitely take a receiver to help out Shador. And I know the O-line situation is a little shaky just because you guys are all free agents and you guys decided to pay Myles Garrett $1 billion and Deshaun Watson $1 billion and a bunch of people a lot of money. So the money is all kind of all over the place. So you need to retain some of those people, but Quinshon Judkins had a great, you know, rookie season. Yeah. So I'm thinking, you know, figure out the O-line, you know, stitch some stuff together and work with a good offensive receiver because Jerry Jeudy, whew,
trash.
Get him out of there.
And then everyone after, like, people after Jerry Jeudy don't even have a name. Like, who do you recognize in their depth chart?
That's kind of crazy.
The worst part, though, is the fact
Cedric Tillman, bro.
He barely played last year.
What was that rookie tight end?
I'm pretty sure he torched
Harold
the Ravens.
Yeah, Fannell
did a whole lot better than Jerry Jeudy.
Harold Fannin was really good. Unfortunately, Njoku probably isn't coming back.
Yeah, that'll
Fannin be. Fannin's a dog.
Bro. Yeah, Fannin is good. Didn't Cedric Tillman torch the Ravens when y'all had Jameis Winston?
Man.
Listen.
Not last year, but a year before that, Cedric Tillman was really good. And Isaiah Bond looked pretty good, so we're low key.
I wouldn't give up on Isaiah Bond yet.
Yeah.
But it is the offseason, so we can't just stick around on NFL football no matter how much I want to. Got to talk some college basketball.
Absolutely.
It's almost March, so that's when college basketball really heats up.
Nah, college basketball heats up in January, but you know.
Well, listen.
Hey, but you know, but there's other sports to worry about in January.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It really heats up in March, so February becomes really important because this is right before the tournament. Seeding is very important. These last few games are very important. It's when the big dogs come out to fight and stuff. And we were talking about Arizona versus Houston last episode. Again, pause it, go back, listen, come back and listen to this. Everybody picked Arizona. I picked Houston. I was right because I'm always right.
I think you mean the other way around.
Or no, Arizona, yeah. Yeah, the other way around. Arizona beat Houston. Everybody picked Houston. I picked Arizona. What did we see in the game? Because they were the top, essentially solidified the Big 12 for Arizona.
This was a very impressive win for Arizona, especially without Koa Pete, who is their best player. It was just an all out great team effort, especially in a away game against Houston because it's very hard to win in that arena. But the other guy, it's simply the other guy stepped up. De La Rosso, he 8-14. I didn't know too much about him, but he played a great game, and their bigs played decent games too. So Arizona, they've shown why they were the top team for a majority of the season.
Yeah, they got a lot of momentum at the end of that game. Houston's offense was so stagnant, like the last couple of minutes. And we were talking about it a little bit early before the pod, like the offense just was not flowing. It felt like they were forcing shots. They only shot 36% from the field, you know, which is never good. I just feel like Arizona was just more prepared.
Yeah, and that's going to be Houston's downfall because they were going back and forth for a good bit. It was just like a cutoff, like a slip just switched, and Houston just could not score. And we saw that against Iowa State as well. That again, Houston had the lead, and then they just stopped scoring and let.
And that's
Iowa
what
State
I brought
in.
Up.
And that's actually what happened in the national championship last year. I know it was a completely different roster, but the same thing happened with Houston. They looked like they were going to beat Florida, and then they just stopped scoring, and that ended up being their downfall.
Josh, I guess you weren't here last week. You didn't hear about any of this, but listen, I was right. But now. The number one overall and just in the whole AP poll changed because Duke beat Michigan.
Yes, sir. We love that. Hey, big Michigan safe in over here. Bump Michigan. It's always a rivalry. But yeah, first and foremost, great game, honestly, all in all.
Absolutely.
It's just that Duke wanted them more. And like I said, just a great all-around game. Shout out to Boozer.
Dropped a double-double.
Indeed, doing his thing.
Bro, that boy can pass that ball, man. Like, I've seen a lot of different takes just on him as a player. I feel like when I'm around y'all or First Strike or the live show, like, we talk very highly of Cam Boozer. Maybe number one overall pick. I go on Twitter. Sometimes people be hating on his game, you know, saying that it might not translate. He does often just pick on undersized players. But I believe his IQ is what sets him apart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't make mistakes ever.
And people have to realize like the differences between NBA and college basketball. In college basketball, people are doing this with horrible spacing, and they're still going up against teams running 2-3 zones, running these classic 2-3 zones. So if you can get your game off against a 2-3, or if you can get your game off against, you know, three of your teammates not being able to shoot, then you're going to be a pretty good player. Because when you go to the NBA, almost everybody's going to be able to shoot. Or if not, and the one person who can't shoot is going to be in a pick and roll with you or something like that. But the spacing is just that much better in the NBA. So I feel like scoring is probably going to be easier for Boozer
once he gets to the. That's what I wanted to speak on, because it's been a three horse race for the number one overall pick. Mm-hmm. You know, it's AJ DeBanta, it's Darren Peterson, it's Cam Boozer. And Cam Boozer is very talented. You know, he's helping. He took his team to the number one rank. Like, he just beat Michigan.
Yeah.
You know, he's the best player on that team by far. You can tell. Like, he's running the offense. He dropped 18. He shot 60% from the field, 1-for-2 from three, 10 rebounds. He was getting to the free throw line. He's doing everything you're supposed to be doing. But like you guys were saying, it seems like a simple game. It seems like a very counterable game. It seems like a game that can't translate. And you were saying that you don't think that's what it is. You think that in the NBA systems, it'll be very different to see him, you know, shine. But he's kind of just driving and hitting these. It's not easy, because nothing's easy. They're trying to guard the best player. But like, he's just, you know, kind of getting physical and getting to the hoop. And it's not going to be that easy in the NBA. And it's not that he's not, doesn't have any perimeter skills. Like, he can, you know, operate out there, but he's not showing like the NBA way of playing. And is that going to change? Like, is he all of a sudden going to be, you know, a small ball guy when he's in the NBA? Is he going to change how he plays?
I mean, I think, I've mentioned this before, how a lot of comparisons show him similar to Kevin Love. And we've seen Kevin Love on the Timberwolves and the Cavs, and both were great. Were great players. On the Timberwolves, he was just a dog. He was able to back guys down, and Kevin Love was still able to shoot and pass and rebound. Those are the things that set him apart. So I feel
like Kevin Love shoots even more than him, though. Like, Kevin Love shoots way more than him. Yeah, so
like the prototype.
I guess so.
I think if Boozer was like a junior or something, like, I'd be like, okay, maybe, I don't know if this would translate. But he's a freshman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's not saying he barely has any experience, but, you know, he's definitely still growing as a player. He is shooting 40% from the three. He's only shooting it about 3 or 4 times a game. But, like, just those intangibles, I feel like, can translate. But I do think it might take a little bit when he gets to the NBA. It might be a little bit of a slow process. Definitely where he gets drafted to. Like, I think if you put him in a great situation, he'll be amazing. But if he's, like, the number one, go out there, score, you're our guy, I'm not necessarily sure.
I think, well, then that's what I'm saying, because I don't think that constitutes a number one pick.
Well, go ahead.
Motherfuck you. But yeah, that is the toughest thing when it comes to the draft. And it goes the same for any sport. Automatically, as you know, the team with the worst record gets the first pick. And sometimes, from what it looks like,
yeah, sometimes
predictions are saying that basically the Sacramento Kings get the first pick of the draft.
Yep.
So with that in mind, the question is, when the Kings get this player, whoever they get, will that player be affected by that system? Like, will their play diminish, or will they able to be cultivated into a superstar to potentially help the Kings prevail?
Look, yeah, if I'm the Kings, I'm not drafting him.
No, I'm not.
As a Kings fan, it don't matter who we could draft, because at the end of the day, you can find flaws in any player. No matter how good they are, you can find flaws in any player, and the Kings will somehow find a way to make that flaw just flourish. But I mean, in all seriousness, going back to Boozer, I think he would very much thrive as, I wouldn't call it a second option, but if he got him a point guard where, like, they could go into a pick and roll. Yeah, like Indiana, he would be amazing in Indiana. Or even we look at something like the Nuggets. I know I'm not saying he's Jokic or anything like that, but get him a Jamal Murray who can, again, they can go in pick and rolls, and they can have, Jamal Murray has that type of gravity where if he's on, he can, you know, get his own thing. And that makes, you know, when Jamal Murray is cooking, that makes Jokic even more dangerous. So I think if Boozer goes to a team that can get him a point guard to work with, then he'll be just as dangerous as he is now in college. Because right now, it's almost like he is the focal point of that offense. It's Boozer and the guys around him. While they're still good, the guys around him are focused around Boozer.
Yeah.
So where would you rank him out of this, like, class? Is big three? Because, you know.
Three.
It's You would put him at three?
Yeah, just purely off of potential. I think right now he's having the best season out of the three. But as far as potential and draft wise and what I'm looking for in the NBA, I would put him at three.
I might have him at two.
Over?
I mean, I think Peterson's a better player, but in terms of like who I draft.
Is the Peterson checkout himself thing the issue?
It's kind of bothering me a little bit.
That is definitely an issue. Like, as a player, I get if you are like severely injured or something like that. But from what I've seen, a lot of the times when he's checking himself out, it's not really a major injury, if you will. It's more so like him being fatigued. And as a coach, you never want to see that. When you're a basketball player or just a sport player in general, you want to see your guys out there and you want to see them compete despite them being tired, because that's where the greats separate themselves from the good players. The greats are able to say, maybe I am tired, but you know what? Let me push past this tiredness and drain these buckets real quick to give my team the lead. They don't just say, ah, coach, I'm tired, sub me out. Nah, they want to be in there because they know that when the pressure gets hot, they can cook.
But the argument is, you know, Darren Peterson goes out there, hoops in the first half. He shows that he's better than everyone else. And then he says, I don't really care about winning. I'm trying to get to the NBA. And he has sufficiently showed that he's a good basketball player. Yes. He's still mocked in the top three. He's not always usually above Cam Boozer, at least. So is it wrong of him to like showcase his skills and then sit down?
I think it's a whole big mix of just different influences. I think right now, I don't think he's at 100%. But I think because of that early season stuff where he was taking himself out and load managing, I think people might, you know, he might have got let the
outside noise. That fits the NBA. That's great for the NBA.
He might have let the outside noise get to his head of people like, oh, he needs to finish games, he needs to do this. And now he's playing not at 100% and he's not looking up to par. Like, if you saw him at the Cincinnati game against Oklahoma State, he was not moving the same as he was in some of those other games and some of the bigger matchups. So it's one of those things, like, you know, dang if you do, dang if you don't. It's like, if he plays, he might not be at 100%. But then if he does play, he plays what, 15 minutes and then takes himself out, then people are gonna be like, oh, you're not hooping enough, you don't want it enough. So it's one of those things, like, you know, where do you find that balance?
Because the Unks, you know, you play through everything. Like, you're never at 100%. You know, I played on a broken ankle, I went out and did this, I went out and did that. And there's something to be said for that. Like, you know, you would want to, you know, try your hardest for your team, always want to play for your team, you know, be a good team player, always want to win, always want to compete. Yeah. Like, there's something to be said about that. But then there's this other side of it that, like, he's worth a lot of money.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, like, if your end goal is the NBA, then that's what his end goal is going to be. I could care less about college. And then me, as a Kansas fan, of course, I want to see Darren Peterson out there playing and hooping every night. But, you know, sometimes, but if it's about him and his draft stock and what the NBA teams want and what the agent, you know, what his agents want, what his parents want, then, you know, college is just a roadblock for his end goal to get to the NBA. And, you know, we might see it become a problem when he gets to the league, or this whole college thing could just be blown out of proportion. And it's just, okay, I didn't care about college because I just want to go to the league.
Okay, well, our last topic of our college basketball segment, we're going to be previewing the game tonight. It's Houston versus Kansas. Kansas number 8, Houston's number 2. What do we think? Who's going to come out on top?
I don't think Kansas is number 8 anymore. I think they dropped down to
Kansas
14.
Houston is 5.
How okay. I just looked this up. Why did it change?
Rankings come out on Monday.
Mm-hmm. I didn't update on the current.
Oh, well, yeah. But Houston's number 5. They only dropped one spot. But
Google's Kansas, letting me down.
Kansas
bro.
Is down to number 14 after a horrible loss at home to Cincinnati. That might be the worst home loss of the Bill Self era. Mm-hmm. It was bad. Like, you, and for any non-Kansas fans, like, that was a horrible loss. But maybe they were just, I would hope that they were just looking ahead to Houston, and that they'll be extra prepared for this game and ready to go. And with Houston losing their past two games against very quality opponents, you know, I feel like both teams need this game a lot. Kansas needs this to bounce back from losing to Cincinnati, and then Houston needs this because if they don't, they're going to go on a three-game losing streak, and they're going to lose a lot of
momentum.
Yeah, a lot of momentum.
That was a great way to paint the story of the game. I'm going to go Houston. I feel like they were very capable of winning both of their last two games. Just kind of fizzled out at the end. Iowa State, they lost on a buzzer beater, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, was it a buzzer beater? They just didn't score for the last minute.
That too. But I don't know. I got Houston in a get-back game. Losing to Iowa State and Arizona, they need a Big 12 win. So that's who I'm going to go with tonight.
Well, I'm wearing a Kansas shirt.
Of course.
I'm matching with blue shoes too. it's like I got to go with the Jayhawks. And, you know, again, we need this win because we can't go on a losing streak after losing Cincinnati.
Honestly, I am going to have to side with Q on this one. I do believe that Kansas is going to have an edge over Houston. You just can't overlook the fact that Houston has certain games where basically down the stretch, when they need a score, they just can't buy a bucket. They're just cold. And when you're going up against a team like Kansas, and is the game at Kansas's house?
Yes, it's an Allen Fieldhouse.
Oh, yeah. You can't go into Kansas's house and just go cold shooting-wise. So give me Kansas for the win.
Only thing about this game, though, is it could be a low-scoring game because outside of Darren Peterson, Kansas does not have that many scores. I mean, Trey White can get his own bucket. Bryson Tiller can get one if you really need him to, but everyone else is more like they need other people to set them up. And again, if Darren Peterson is up to his usual stuff, it could get real ugly, and it might be a low scoring game.
Yeah, I would agree, because like, you know, if your star player isn't playing the whole time, it's hard to, you know, pick them to win a game because they don't get a full game of their full roster. But if Darren Peterson plays the whole game, I'm gonna take Kansas. I'm not gonna lie. They're both, you know, let a few games slip away from them. They're both like looking to get back on track, but I believe more in Kansas for sure.
It's just me. I'm okay with that.
It's a little scary.
Listen, we will check back next week. All right, moving over to professional basketball, the NBA. The All-Star break just ended, and we're going to predict the winners of the end-of-season awards going into the back half of the season. Fellas, who do you think is the MVP of the league?
You know what? It's not even a shot in the dark. Give me Cade Cunningham.
Oh, okay. Really?
Absolutely. The way that Cade Cunningham has improved his playing style, he's shooting a lot better. He's assisting. He's playing great defense. Cade Cunningham is doing what is needed from him. He's the main reason why the Detroit Pistons have become the number one team. So you know what? Cade Cunningham for MVP.
I'm gonna go with Luka.
Oh, Luka. Not expecting that at all.
Luka.
Yeah, I mean, Luka, well, he hoops every season, but Luka really has been hooping this season, and I feel like he is a big part as to why the Lakers are where they're at in the standings. Because, you know, can we say this isn't LeBron's team
anymore? Oh, it's definitely not LeBron's team.
LeBron just chilling, basically.
Yeah,
at
LeBron.
This point.
LeBron.
Yeah. So,
LeBron is out there like hooping like it's the rec. Like he's doing whatever he wants to do, and then like he doesn't like losing. So at the end of the game, he locks in. But like most of the game, he's doing whatever he wants.
Mm-hmm. And you know, and that's not to take away from what Austin Reeves is doing, because Austin Reeves has been hooping this season too. But I just think the fact that the Lakers are pretty much they're within one game of the three seed just speaks to how good Luka is. And if you compare it to the other teams, like the other guys in the MVP race, like Jokic and Shea, and you know, they have these amazing teams around them. And I feel like their supporting cast can still win games without them, versus the Lakers is like, if Luka's not hooping, they're probably not.
That is true.
That's when
Luka's not hooping, the Lakers do look bad. Lakers look pretty ugly when Luka's not hooping.
If I'm just being honest, bro, I don't like watching Luka play. Like, I'm
what?
Just not a fan of it.
It depends on the night. I'm not gonna lie.
His defense is so bad, and I feel like this year is at the peak of like the worst. It's been horrible. And the complaining and the flopping, like I
will never,
it's not me,
ever,
me personally,
like understand people complaining about flopping because their favorite player flops so much. Your favorite player flops a lot.
It's the flop, then complain and not getting back on defense.
Bro, LeBron does that. And he's been doing it for a decade.
But that's the GOAT, though, so it's different.
Nah, it's not different. LeBron's been doing it for a decade.
But LeBron will play defense.
LeBron has been hacked before, and LeBron has also not been hit at all. And LeBron has also laid on the ground and pretended like he got hit.
But when he locks in, he can play defense. Luka can't guard a cone.
Luka cannot guard, but let's not act like everybody doesn't flop.
I'm with you with that. Okay. If I had to pick, I believe Jokic can only miss one more game, and then he's eliminated with the 65.
Thank
game
God,
rule.
Bro.
Shea
is a one-time MVP right there.
Shea can currently.
No.
Yeah, I was going to say that was crazy.
No. We can talk about it a different time, but no.
Shea is currently out. He can only miss a couple more games, but I'm going to go with Shea. As of right now, he's as efficient as ever. He's basically 50-40-90, averaging almost 32 points. You know, the Thunder are an amazing team, of course. I feel like the only argument against him is that, like, they're still hooping, even though he is hurt. And, you know, his supporting cast is amazing. If I had to pick right now, I might go Jaylen Brown, bro. Jaylen Brown is averaging close to 30, definitely the best season of his career. And his team sucks. Like, it's like the Celtics are not a good team at all. If we're talking about the same thing we talked about Luka, where you don't have a good roster around you, I feel like Jaylen Brown is able to also go out there and hoop, and he's guarding either the first or second best player as well out there. You know, it's either him
I feel
or
that's
White.
A little bit of like there's no other option type hoops. You know, like,
but they're still winning.
That's what I get from
they
Jaylen
are still
Brown.
Winning,
like,
but
who else is gonna
they're
score?
Like the two seed.
They are the two seed, but it's the East.
But if you would have asked anybody what the Celtics were going to be this year, you wouldn't have said two.
That's true, but it's also the East. Like, name a good team in the East.
Pistons. I mean, but it doesn't.
But then the Pistons
but it doesn't
are
matter.
Them,
their
so
record
like,
is still good. Like, it's not like they're only good because they're in the East. Like, they're playing. They have the second best record or the third best record in the league.
Yeah. Okay. This is one of the harder MVP races in a long time. Like, it's usually clear cut, you know, two guys. But you know, if you said I don't mind Cade, even though it's a homer pick from Josh,
I don't think that's
it's still a homer pick. But you
it's
know,
a homer pick, but I don't mind it.
Especially what he just did to Brunson, bro.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I don't mind the Luka pick at all. He always hoops, and I think he was robbed of an MVP. Shea's a good answer. You know, his team's historical. Jaylen Brown, you know, is whatever. He probably deserves. You know, whatever. I don't care. I don't like the Celtics. No, Cade's number two in assists per game.
Cade hooping, boy. I ain't gonna lie.
An answer that's not bad is Wemby.
Not at all.
Yeah. I don't know if he. He still qualifies. But yeah. But like, he's leading the league in blocks. He's almost at 3 blocks a game. He's averaging 25 points a game. He's really out here hooping. It's a tough pick this season. I think it might be Shea again. I'm not going to lie.
It's probably going to be Shea.
No. If he doesn't miss.
And I finally see a clear answer to best player in the best team. Because every year they're like, oh, we picked the best player in the best team. Or this should be this and this. And a lot of times it's not. But Shea is the best player on the best team. And if that's how you're going to base your MVP pick, I don't mind him getting another one.
No, sir.
What do you mean? What is your argument against Shea?
Look, like I said before, Cade Cunningham has made a lot of drastic improvements.
Yeah.
And right now, the Pistons, in my opinion, the Pistons look to be the best team in the NBA.
Dare I say
that if the NBA final were to be the Pistons versus the Thunder.
Wait.
I take the Pistons in 7 games.
Hey, so this is a homer pick, Josh.
Hey, bro, like we were with you and
we were
just,
so with you, bro.
Like you just
you ruined
took
it.
Too far.
I think the Pistons versus the Thunder will be a great finals to watch, and I think they lose in 6.
Absolutely not. But we'll see.
shout out to Cade.
We'll see.
Bro.
I shout out
Cade, bro.
I got
He's
the Pistons out the East, but you know,
come on, man.
That's where it ends.
That is where it ends. And I would love to see Pistons Knicks just because he did do Brunson a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be a very entertaining series. Very entertaining series. Maybe a little beef coming out the East. Like, you know how we have generations of matchups? I would love to see that build into something.
Mm-hmm.
But
don't let them play the Celtics. You know them old heads will get up for Pistons Celtics.
Ooh-wee. Let me tell you something.
All right, Defensive Player of the Year. Who is it?
Wemby.
Wemby.
He was robbed last year.
absolutely robbed.
And I don't.
Was he eligible last year?
He wasn't.
Yeah, he could not have been eligible.
But
and he might not be eligible this year. But
I think he needs to lock in.
He just
in.
Can't miss.
He can't miss like one more game.
Is it one more game?
Yeah.
They need to change the rule.
65 is too.
He was dealing with blood clots. I think it was the reason why he was out. You can't really.
Yeah. I think they should change the rule. They should also shorten the season. I might make a segment on fixing the NBA in the upcoming episodes.
No, we need to talk about the tanking and all that. And
Might make an episode about fixing the NBA.
Wemby can miss 5 more games.
5 more? Yeah, that's definitely his then.
Yeah. Gotta go. Yeah,
Wemby, please stay healthy, man. We want to see you get what you deserve. You know, you're leading the league in blocks. Nobody can come in the paint when you're in there. We would love to see Wemby get his DPOY. Coach of the Year.
JB Bickerstaff.
Yeah, he deserves.
I'm glad you got it this time.
Shout out to the Cavs.
Hallelujah. Thank you, Jesus.
I don't know if we left it in the edit. I didn't go back and check, but you know, if you know, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was
it was.
Yes.
Is there anybody else? It might just be him. Joe Mazzulla has a case as well.
Does he? Yeah, he does. He does.
He definitely has a case.
Most improved player.
Denny Johnson.
Ryan Rollins.
Danny Avdija is a good pick. I think Cade has a good.
I think Cade has surpassed that.
I think this is the last year he could do it. Cade could do it. What did he average last season?
Most improved to me, bro. Like
that's not even what the award is.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
We got to give it to the people who actually
improve.
I'm not giving a number one overall pick most improved. That's crazy to me.
That's not crazy. Yes, he got better.
Yeah, he did, but that's not what the award is for, bro. In my eyes. Like, it should be going to those role players who elevated to an all-star.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dyson Daniels won it last year. I feel like that's a great winner, you know?
Or even, I mean, like Jalen Duren. Jalen Duren's up here on the FanDuel odds. Like, that. Mm-hmm. That's Jalen, and like Josh said, Denny Avdija. Those are good picks. Those are guys. And even
Jalen
even though,
Johnson.
Yeah, they, even though they're good players, you know, they were already good players.
Cade finished 7th in MVP voting last season. He can't get it.
Yeah.
But, Denny Avdija. Who else did I hear?
We said Denny Avdija, Jalen Johnson, Jalen Duren.
Yeah, those are all good picks. I think.
I really like Ryan.
I was 3 years too early on Jalen Duren. I think
3 years.
I think not 3 years, but I think freshman year I said Jalen Duren was gonna be most improved, and he hasn't shown it until this year. But you know, never wrong, just early.
Never
as they
wrong.
Say.
I think most improved player is one of the harder ones to pick, just because.
No, I'm looking at stats. I'm definitely going Ryan Rollins. I'm not going to lie. He was cut last year, and now he's averaging 17.
Yeah,
and
that's a good pick. And I feel like that's if we're truly talking about what most improved should be, it's for stories like that.
But I also feel like easily he could be overlooked just because, like, he doesn't have a big, you know, recognition. And so Denny Avdija could easily take that from him because he has improved a lot, too. And he's like, he was an all-star. He played at the all-star weekend. He was all there. And like, he had that thing with, who was it? Wemby?
Yeah.
So like, there's a whole thing. So I feel like just being known more, and he actually did improve a lot too, might take that from Ryan Rollins. 6th man of the year.
This is where things get dicey because apparently, looking at odds, right now, the top 3 names are Naz Reid, Keldon Johnson, and Jaime Jaquez Jr.
I don't like Naz Reid at the top because Naz Reid be like last year, Naz Reid started a whole bunch of games
and then they moved him to the bench later on.
Yeah,
the season.
And just because he was listed as 6th man, but he started majority of the season and got the award. I feel like you have to be a true 6th man.
I might go, shout out to Trim. I might go Anthony Black.
He's smooth. He's good.
Anthony Black is 6th right now, though.
I like the AJ Mitchell pick.
AJ Mitchell as well.
He you know, he just comes in and does his job. He scores the ball. We know what he's in for, and that's what a 6th man is. Like, you know your role and you do your role well off the bench.
I will take my Homer pick. I'll take my Jaime Jaquez pick.
I'm not mad at it.
Love a good Jaime Jaquez dunk every couple months.
A couple months,
a Jaime Jaquez dunk goes crazy on my For You page.
It does look key, though. I won't lie.
Should see him at UCLA.
Actually,
he already got it, and he's not really a 6th man anymore. So yeah.
He's not.
Yeah, like, good. If you said Naz Reid was starting in an adjusted lineup in the playoffs the whole time, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just a different lineup almost. It's not even like a six man. It's more like an adjusted lineup.
Yeah. What else you got?
That's it, man. Yeah. This brings us to my favorite part of the podcast, the shout outs. I want to shout out my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. I want to shout out my family. I want to shout out the guys in the studios, all the playmakers. Shout out J School. They let us on the air and stuff.
I want to shout out my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Shout out to my mother, father, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, friends. Shout out to the entire state of Mississippi with the exception of Madison County.
We hate Madison County.
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. Actually, shout out to Northern Rankin. That was my high school. District champs in both girls and boys basketball. Hope we can advance in playoffs. And I don't know if I can say this, but shout out to Los Tacos, number one in New York.
Alrighty, so first and foremost, shout out to my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. He's the reason why we're here, reason why we have purpose. Shout out to my parents and to my family. Thank you guys for the support. And most importantly, you know, shout out to you guys, man. It's fun being here in the studio with
appreciate
the Playmakers.
That.
Definitely, bro.
Indeed.
Shout out to my family, man. Shout out to God, of course. Shout out to everybody back home. We just lost one of my homeboys from back home. Rest in peace, Kyle Basinga. Sending prayers to their family and everybody that they got going on. And check on your people, man. Mental health is definitely real.
Indeed.
And we want to say, click the link in our bio to give us some feedback. If you're listening to us or any other 90.5 media, you know, click the link in our bio at 905 The Flavor or 905 The Flavor Sports. There will be a link in there for y'all. Halftime with the Playmakers is produced in the studios of WANM FM 90.5 in the School of Journalism and Graphic Communication at Florida A&M University.